My name's Michelle. Last December, my long-term boyfriend Kai finally proposed. We've been together for years, but it still came as a surprise. Even though we loved each other very much, I knew that his mother didn't approve of our relationship. She grew up in Japan, and she wanted her son to marry a nice Japanese girl instead of an American like me. I said yes, of course. Kai was the love of my life. The day after our proposal, Kai took me to his mother, Miko, so that we could share the news. We were both pretty nervous about how she would react. Miko smiled as we told her, but I could tell that she was disappointed. Eventually, she said that she'd approve of our marriage if she could take a look at our palms. Miko was very superstitious, and she believed that the lines in our palms would tell if we were compatible. I didn't know if palm reading was part of her culture or if she was just using it as an excuse to split us up. I didn't want to show her my palm, but I also didn't want to upset the future mother-in-law. So the three of us sat in her kitchen table. Kai and I placed down our right hands on the table, and Miko examined the lines in our palms. After a long, awkward moment, she sighed and said, "I'm sorry, but this isn't a match. I will not approve of this marriage." Kai looked horrified, but he wasn't brave enough to argue with her. I wanted to say something, but Kai grabbed my arm and we left. On the car ride back home, I told Kai that we should just elope. I said that his mother would come around eventually. Kai didn't speak for a while. Then he smiled and said he had a plan. He explained that if his mother's only problem was our palm lines, then we could just change them. His cousin was a plastic surgeon, so I could go to him and get my palm lines redrawn. I'd never heard of this before, but apparently a lot of people in Japan get this kind of surgery. A surgeon burns a new line into the palm. I guess a lot of men do it to change their wealth lines, and women do it to change their love lines. Kai made it seem like it was a normal thing. "No," I told him. I was a professional pianist, and I didn't want to do anything to mess with my hands. No matter how safe the surgery was, I didn't want to risk it just because his mother was being difficult. I thought the conversation was over, but Kai kept begging me to reconsider. When we were back home, he showed me his cousin's website, which was full of testimonials from satisfied customers. The surgery was cheap and recovery time was just a few days. I loved Kai so much. Even though the idea made me very uncomfortable, I eventually gave in. Kai called up his cousin and scheduled my appointment for next week. As the surgery got closer and closer, I got more nervous. Every time I practiced my piano, I kept thinking about my poor hands. The website said that there was virtually no risks to the surgery, but I had this horrible feeling that something was going to go wrong. On the morning of my surgery, Kai left the house to go shopping for all my favorite snack foods. He wanted to pamper me after the operation. While he was gone, I went online once again to read about the recovery process, and I wanted to prepare myself. Because my laptop was having issues, I used Kai's computer instead. I read through his cousin's website one more time. All the information seemed reassuring. I was about to close the laptop when I saw that Kai's WhatsApp messages were still open. I knew it was none of my business, but something compelled me to look. I saw that Kai had been messaging his mother multiple times in the last few days. It was all in Japanese, so I couldn't read it. I knew that he would tell her about the surgery, so I figured that that's what they were talking about. Just in case, I opened up Google Translate and copied their last few messages into the text box. What I saw made me want to throw up. His most recent message was, "After today, I'll have the perfect housewife." I translated more of the messages and found out that Kai and his mother had planned to sabotage my surgery. He wanted to mangle my hands so that I'd have to give up being a pianist. I couldn't tell if this was Miko's idea or Kai's, but either way, he was willing to mutilate me just so I'd lose my career and become a dutiful housewife. I clicked on his WhatsApp messages to his doctor cousin. Thankfully, those were in English, so I didn't need to translate. Unlike Miko, his cousin sounded very uncomfortable with the idea of purposely botching the surgery. But I saw that Kai had agreed to pay him thousands of dollars. I'd never felt angrier in my life. I thought Kai loved me. How could he do this to me? He still hadn't returned, and my surgery was only a few hours away. I looked up his cousin's number and called him directly. I'd never talked to him before, but he seemed like a good guy who was forced into a terrible situation. I told him that I'd discovered it, and he begged me not to tell anyone. He said his practice was failing, and he desperately needed Kai's money. I thought about calling the police right then and there, but then I thought of another plan. I told him that I'd double the money if he gave me a different surgery instead. I'd use Kai's money, of course, enough to drain his bank account completely. We hashed out our plan right before Kai returned from the supermarket. An hour later, Kai drove me to the clinic. In the waiting room, I asked him one more time if he thought the surgery was safe. He looked me dead in the eye and told me that there was nothing to worry about. I smiled and said, okay. When the doctor took me into the operating room, he made Kai wait outside. Then he started the surgery, but he didn't operate on my hands. He gave me breast implants, massive breast implants. When I walked out to the waiting room with my gigantic new knockers, Kai almost fainted. Thanks for paying for the operation, I told him, but I think we should see other people.
With every day that passed, of the month since my father died, I sensed my small world and my short life slowly grinding to an end. The first week had come with a sharp pain in my chest. The pain from heartbreak at such a devastating loss was so torturous that I, like a wounded animal dragging myself to the teeth of the predatory hands of death, did all I could to induce an end. I am certain I did not sleep more than a few hours the entire first week when my father had died, the man whose life was the universe and a person to me. On the seventh day of my father's death, I slept. I slept so much that my heart seemed to sense some relief. The second week replaced objection with rage. My father was a man who had done so much for the people around him. He loved people just as he always said Christ loved us. Yet when he had suffered a heart attack, lying on the floor and clutching his chest in sheer agony, the ambulance had taken no less than 3 hours to arrive. I didn't know what to make of it. That cruelty of one man to the other because of the situation of his life. My father had always said that what a man lacked in materials didn't matter, but what he lacked in spirit did. I had kissed my teeth on that instance. My father had died because he was poor, so I started to loathe it. Every memory of my loving father riled my spirit, that in one moment of vexation, I knew I had to sell off everything the man owned if I were to find peace from the troubles of the old man's remembrance. I turned to the only place I knew I could rid myself of the properties. Facebook. The Facebook marketplace had been a decent place to trade some of my little possessions in the past, and they fetched a better sum than a yard sale could. I took out his possessions and photographed all of it, registering none of it as I started to post the images on Facebook for sale. I mulled over my loss on the fifth day of that second week when a prospective buyer had made an inquiry of a weirdly shaped instrument that they had seen. The comment was enthusiastic, almost encouraging in tone. But my confusion came from the fact that I did not remember uploading the odd instrument. The shape of it was like a cup, but not a regular cup. The spout was crooked and the tube was long. It seemed to have been made from steel, but from years of wear, it had turned into a strange fire-burnt color. The commenter asked if we could discuss the purchase of this privately. I saw no harm in it. After all, it was Facebook, and all sorts of weird bots lurked to ruin the experience of a good conversation. I agreed, and I sent the first message. The man replied with a greeting and introduced himself as Elias. The conversation progressed, and he asked how I had come upon the cup. I was reluctant, but with a little prodding, I revealed that it was part of my father's property that I wanted to get rid of. Elias asked why. I said my father was dead. Then there was heightened interest. Elias said he would be purchasing the cup and he could make the payment up front for it. I was pleased to hear it, and not realizing how much the cup was worth, I asked how much he was willing to pay. He hesitated. Then he came back with an offer of $25,000. I thought I had read wrongly. Another Facebook prankster, I sighed. When I did not reply, Elias upped the price of his accord, offering to pay $40,000. I went on with the conversation for the thrill of it, having no faith in the fact that my father had such a prize in his possession and lived in such dire state. I replied to Elias that I would receive the sum in cash, and I wanted $50,000 for it. Elias said that could be arranged. Then, we set up a meeting place at a local church at my request. Anxiety was usual, and I expected it, even though it overwhelmed me to the point of crippling me to my knees. I had grown up poor in my father's little house, and I was meeting with a man for $50,000 in cash for a weird-looking cup I could have given away for free. I thought myself a fool as I stood there in a quiet of dusk, scanning my environment for Elias's approach. When Elias finally came, I knew because Elias drove a very large dark SUV that intimidated his wealth, and he came alone. Elias approached with a somber air, and he started with his question. "Are you Adam?" I nodded positively. "Do you have the cup?" I paused, and then I nodded again. "Do you know what this means?" I did not, but I knew better than to concede my ignorance in the face of $50,000 in cash, so I neither denied nor affirmed. "Do you have any wife or kids that would take the cash?" Elias asked, and the air suddenly turned dark and intense between us as Elias pulled on his coat to reveal a shiny blade. "What do you mean?" I spoke for the first time. "You do know what you hold." Elias's brow jumped and a sinister mien plastered across his face. I was at once apprehensive, sensing the menace that Elias presented. Elias's superior knowledge of something I did not know about the cup scared me. "That is the cup of communion itself," Elias gasped in a wide-eyed frenzy. "The cup that touched the lips of Christ in all its power. You agreed to lay your life like the Christ that this cup may pass to me, just like it has been done through time."
"No!"
I cried. Elias no longer had a friendly grin on his face. Instead, it was a smirk, a knowing smirk that he could outwit me and seize the cup. My trepidation manifested physically. I stepped back, racked by fright that made my bowels loose in my stomach. My chest thumped, and that sharp pain returned with an intense pang when Elias started to approach. His eyes were glazed with desperation. Every fiber of my being caught on fire, and terror wrestled control of my limbs when I tried to run. All of a sudden, Elias whipped out a blade from a sheath cleverly disguised beneath his clothes. The glint of the shiny metal caught the light for a brief moment before he sprung after me, charging forward with the weapon raised high. Panic surged through me, and I scrambled backward. In my haste, my foot caught on something, and with a loud shriek, I went sprawling to the ground. Elias also clumsily collapsed onto me with the blade unusually turned, poking the right part of Elias's chest. Elias gasped for air as the blade tore into his heart. I watched the man struggle for his life for a minute, living through the moment like a fever nightmare, and it was not until Elias was motionless that I took to my heels, escaping as far as I could from terror, which my mind would not process until the week after.
I was scrolling through Facebook one afternoon when a message popped up from someone I hadn't spoken to in a while. I'd met Jolene at a local cooking class a while back, but we never were close, and we didn't keep in touch since it ended. "Hey Haley, it's good to hear from you again. How's everything going?" I frowned and opened up the chat, wondering what she was talking about. Good to hear from me. I didn't recall messaging her at any time recently, nor did I bump into her anywhere. I assumed that she'd sent it to the wrong person, but she addressed it to me directly. I checked the rest of the chat, and it was empty. Jolene's message was the only one there, which was odd. There should at least be evidence of our old messages, but it had been wiped clean apart from Jolene's strange reply to a message that I never sent. Oh, hey, yeah, it's good to hear from you. I'm doing well, thanks. I didn't want to outright ask why she was messaging me out of the blue, so I kept the message simple and vague. A couple of dots appeared as she prepared to reply. About meeting up, I'm free on Tuesday if that works for you. My frown deepened. Meeting up? What was she talking about? Was I missing something here? I'm sorry, this is gonna sound weird, but what do you mean? I don't remember asking to meet up. My message might have been a little blunt, but I was getting confused. It was like there was another person involved in the conversation that I couldn't see. She did know it was me she was talking to, right? It took a few minutes for Jolene's to reply to pop up. Oh, you sent a message a few days ago asking if we could catch up over coffee. Don't you remember? It wasn't a case of misremembering. There was no way I would have done that. I hadn't even thought about Jolene since last year. Why would I suddenly want to meet up? I think there's been a mistake, sorry, but I'm glad you're doing well, though. Jolene didn't send a reply back, so I put my phone down and tried not to think about it. Jolene must have gotten confused or something, but that wasn't the only strange incident to happen on Facebook. A few days later, I got a couple messages from my friends who were concerned, asking if everything was okay. I opened the message from my friend Megan first, feeling a strange sense of impending apprehension. Hey Haley, I saw your recent post. I just wanted to check in that everything was okay. XX. I bit my lip and swallowed. Recent post? I didn't post anything recently. At least, not that I was aware of. Had I done it by accident? I went to my profile before I replied to Megan, but there wasn't any recent posts. What was she talking about? Hey Megan, what post are you talking about? While I waited for Megan to reply, I checked the other two unread messages in my inbox. Both were along similar lines as Megan's, talking about some post I put up and asking if there was anything that I wanted to talk about. I sent similar replies, asking what post they were talking about, because I didn't ever recall publishing anything to my profile. Megan's reply came through a few minutes later. You made some post about nobody missing you if you were suddenly to disappear. It made me worry, is all. The apprehension in my stomach turned to dread. What was she talking about? I didn't do anything like that, and I never would. I didn't post that. I sent back to her. That's a relief. I was worried you were going through something, but I'm pretty sure it was under your name that I saw it. First the missing messages with Jolene, and now some weird post on my profile. What was all this about? I had someone hack into my account or something? I said as much to Megan, who replied, maybe you should change your password just to be safe. Following her advice, I changed my password and re-logged into my profile. If someone was posting weird things into my account, this should stop them from doing anything else. Or so I thought. A week later, Megan messaged me again. Apparently, I posted another strange encrypted message onto my timeline. And this time, she'd taken a screenshot of the post before it was taken down. The bodies are buried under the bridge. Come and get them. I felt sick to my stomach. What bodies? What was it talking about? And who posted this in the first place? What the hell is going on? I messaged Megan. I changed my password and everything. How come I'm still being hacked? I don't know, Megan replied. But it is creepy. Whose bodies are they talking about? I have no idea, I typed out despondently. Of course, that was before I watched the news later that evening. The news that would give me all the horrible answers I wish I didn't have. What are you going to do about it? Megan asked as I sat on my sofa, trying not to freak out about the thought of some stranger hacking into my account. Is there anything I can do? I'll try changing my password again, but if that didn't work the first time. But the second time that week, I changed my password on Facebook to something that I hoped that nobody would ever be able to guess. But I was doubtful that it would help. Maybe there was someone hacking in some other way, whoever they were. Hopefully they'll leave you alone, Megan messaged once I logged back in. Yeah, hopefully. I put my phone down, hoping to forget all about it, and turned on the TV. It was just after 6, so the news was on. I turned up the volume and felt a wave of nausea wash over me as the local news presenter went on to the main story. The bodies of 2 identified women were found this morning under a bridge in downtown Brooklyn, she said. Police are asking who was in the area that night on the 14th to come forward if they saw anything suspicious. Bodies under the bridge. Surely it was nothing more than a coincidence, including the fact that I lived downtown Brooklyn. There was no way that the person who hacked into my Facebook account was the same person who murdered these 2 women, right? My phone pinged, and I picked it up to see a flood of notifications on my Facebook account. What was going on? Why was everybody messaging me? I ignored most of the messages and went straight to Megan's, since she was my best friend. Haley, check her profile now. I did it as fast as I could, clicked on my profile, and a new post was put up. Barely a minute ago. This time, it was a picture. A bloody knife was in the frame, and though it was too dark to make out any details, the pale face of a woman covered in blood was just visible in the photo's periphery. I almost dropped the phone in shock and horror. This couldn't be happening. No way. Ignoring all the messages on my Facebook account, I immediately dialed the police. As soon as I was connected, I tried to stop my voice from trembling as I spoke. My name is Haley Denvers, and I think that whoever killed these women is downtown Brooklyn and somehow hacked into my Facebook account. Over the next few months, I was called by the investigating team several times. They took my statements and told me to keep watch. It's been 6 months since this incident, and I live under constant fear. My mind has stopped working, and I can't process it all. What do you think? Would you think that the killer would hack my account and try to frame me? As a gay man, I try not to eat Chick-fil-A. I know that the company has donated a bunch of money to anti-gay politicians, or at least that's what my boyfriend, James, tells me. He's pretty strict about avoiding the place entirely, and I usually just go along with it, but truth is, I freaking love Chick-fil-A. Those waffle-cut fries are amazing. Last weekend, James was out of town, and I had a craving. So I got in my car and drove to the Chick-fil-A near our apartment. I walked in and saw a group of 3 sitting at the table. They were 3 men in their 20s, all very blonde and very good looking, like they were models from a catalog or something. They sat together and were all praying. As I walked past them to place my order, all 3 of them stopped praying and turned to look at me. They stared at me with blank faces. Right away, I felt really self-conscious. I know it sounds paranoid, but I could tell that they instantly knew I was gay. I could feel the hate in their expressions. I looked down at my clothes and realized that my t-shirt had a rainbow design across the front. I didn't even realize that until I saw them staring at me. I didn't want any trouble, so I rushed to the front counter to order. I'd just get my meal, keep my head down, and then leave. The young guy at the counter didn't seem to care about what I was wearing. He took my order and I waited by the counter, as far away from that church group as I could get. As I waited, I kept glancing at the group. They were whispering again, and I knew it was about me. When my food finally came, I took it and I started to leave. I walked really fast, keeping my head down, but before I made it to the door, one of the men shouted at me to stop. I was not going to stop. I had to get away from them. I reached for the door, ready to leave, when one of the men jumped out of his chair and dove at me. He tackled me onto the ground. My bag of food went flying. I begged him to stop. I said that I didn't want any trouble. I just wanted to go home. He got in my face and said, "Do not leave." The other guys of his group gathered around me too. I was struggling to break free, but more of them were holding me down. I tried to look at the worker behind the counter, but I couldn't see him. "Please," I said. "I don't want to die." With all the strength I had, I pushed the guy off of me and jumped up. I tried to make a run for it, but they were all on me at once. They grabbed my arms and held me back from the door. That's when I noticed the commotion that was going on outside. I could see the parking lot through the windows, and there was a fight going on. Two men were loudly arguing next to their cars. It looked like one of them had crashed into the other, and things were escalating fast. The bigger guy pulled out a knife on the other one and started swiping it through the air. That's when I realized this church group didn't want to hurt me at all. They noticed the fighting outside and wanted to protect me. In my blind rush towards the door, I didn't see the danger that I was about to walk into. I instantly stopped resisting them and backed away from the door. I'm sorry, I told them. I didn't realize what was happening. Behind us, the worker told everyone to stay inside. He had just called the police. I waited with the three men as the fighting continued outside. I watched with horror as the man with the knife jumped at the other man and stabbed him right in the stomach. He fell to the ground, blood pooling under him. The three men whispered prayers under their breath, and I guess I did too. Then the attacker reached down and yanked the knife out of the other man's torso. He stood up and started walking right towards us. I could hear the worker fumbling with his keys. He ran towards the door to lock it, but he was too late. The man with the knife had already pushed his way inside. He started screaming at us. "You saw nothing!" He was still waving his knife around. His eyes were wild. He was probably on some sort of... I stepped back, as everyone else did too. But that man kept walking closer. For some reason, his eyes locked on me. He ran towards me, and he would have stabbed me too. But all three of the blonde men stepped in front of me, shielding me from the maniac. They didn't even hesitate. They just sprang into action. His knife cut into one of their arms, but they were able to grab him from all sides and force him to drop the weapon. They held him in place, even though he was screaming at them and violently flailing around. A minute later, the police arrived. Two of them went to help the wounded man outside, while the other two came in and cuffed the attacker before he could hurt anyone else. The police asked for our statements and then left. I turned towards the three men, and they were all happy to just be alive. They asked how I was doing, and I said that I was okay. I apologized for jumping to conclusions, and I thanked them for saving my life. One of the men, probably the most handsome of the bunch, came over and gave me a big hug. He smiled and said, "We could tell you were having a bad day, the way you came inside and instantly glared at us." I didn't even realize that I was glaring, but I guess I was. Maybe they had thought that I was the problem the whole time. The worker gave us all free food, and we sat together and ate. We wound up talking for hours. I couldn't believe that this happened to me, but I learned my lesson. I should never judge people before I get to know them. Sometimes complete strangers might save your life.